We have an unidentified flying object.
Researcher on a mission with Dr. J. Andy Elias.
Welcome back to Researchers on a Mission Radio. I'm your host, Dr. J, and of course, my co-host, all the way from London, Johnny Webb. And today, of course, we always have a fascinating show for you today. But today is different because we have a two-part show for you. Part two, you'll be hearing from Timothy Good. But first, we're speaking with witness from the Disclosure Project held by Dr. Stephen Greer, 2001, a military witness, and someone who deeply knows about ufology and the matrix that we're living in and what we're being taught, which is not the truth, obviously. We're being taught going in a totally different direction. Well, I'd rather let Dan, the man, explain it himself, but let's bring on Dan Willis. Mr. Willis, welcome to the show.
Dr. J, always a pleasure to be with you.
It's a pleasure to have you. Now, let's go back to 2001, because prior to you getting to the Disclosure Project held at the National Press Club by Dr. Greer, you were a witness to something. So tell us what happened and then essentially what brought you there in a nutshell, so we don't spend the entire show on that.
Oh, well, very briefly, 1969, I was in naval communications and received a secret priority message from a ship that was porting extraterrestrial craft coming out of the ocean being sent to Chief of Naval Operations. That opened my awareness that the U.S. Navy is aware of the extraterrestrial presence on the oceans. In 2000, I went to a conference and I became aware of what Dr. Greer was doing with gathering together hundreds of witnesses. All this came about from a meeting that he had back in 93 with the CIA director, who was denied access into a request from Clinton, President Clinton, to look into the UFO files. And so military advisors that they needed to get hundreds of witnesses, which they did, over 500 witnesses. And in May 9th of 2001, 21 of those witnesses, of which I was one, were willing to testify under oath before Congress. Each one of us stated that in front of 22 cameras of the major media. This was aired on CNN and all the major networks. You know, amazing things were disclosed. And that's how I got involved in this whole thing.
Well, what have you been doing since?
Well, after the press club, you know, I thought I was actually going to be part of a world-changing event, because the things that were disclosed about, you know, an alien base on the other side of the moon, 57 different species already categorized, you know, nukes being shut down, that we had the black scientists within the black projects that can prove we have a solution to get off of nuclear and oil for over 60 years. All this explosive testimony was very carefully, systematically sanitized out by the mainstream media. So, you know, the average listener back there just thought, oh, they want to have President Bush have a congressional hearing on the reality of UFOs, you know, and no idea did the public have of, you know, what the real issues were. So after being on CNN, CBS sent a special assignment team to do an interview with me exclusively, and I said I was not willing to do this interview unless I could state on the air that we have the scientists that are operating within these black projects that can prove before an open congressional hearing, you know, put it on the desk in front of them and show it operating, that there's technologies that have been hidden for over 60 years that can completely eliminate the energy crisis and ongoing environmental damage done by these obsolete technologies that we've been enslaved to all these years. They promised up and down. The woman was in tears afterwards, saying, I'm sorry, I know I promised you, but the higher executives maybe cut that part out. And so one of the witnesses that joined me, Daniel Sheehan, he's a famous Washington attorney. He shared with me a document showing the 42 CIA NSA operatives that are all in the position of the higher levels of mainstream media, whose job is specifically to, anything comes out like this, any kind of leaks, they sanitize this information out. And so, you know, all this, I'm just a witness. You know, I'm not a historian, UFOologist, or conspiracy theorist or anything. I just happen to be a military witness. So, you know, I was wondering, you know, what is behind all this? You know, just last year, A company out of Hollywood wanted me to write an article on media control because, you know, coincidentally, I happened to be I was a broadcast engineer for the most powerful FM station for many years and also an ABC newsman. So, and, you know, after traveling around the country to the major cities with Dr. Greer, you know, in Colorado, LA, San Francisco, up and down Oregon, everywhere, every single place we went, they made fun of it. You know, in other words, you know, San Diego had dancing alien dolls. San Francisco said, oh, the Disclosure Project's looking to aliens to solve the world's energy problems, and so forth and so on. So without skipping a beat, every single outlet of the major networks were always making, you know, the giggle factor, as they say, on this whole very, very serious subject. So I started to research, and I put together this article for this company, and it was titled, Who Controls the Agreed-Upon Reality Through the Mainstream Media and Why They Fear Disclosing the Truth About the Extraterrestrial Reality. So I, you know, look back over 100 years and try to piece together based on, because I was already aware of many of the hundreds of witness testimonies. I've seen the classified documents. I've, you know, interacted with the witnesses. I became very aware of what has been hidden. And so based on referencing it to leaked classified documents that have been authenticated and also witness testimonies, I started to do my own research. Now, keep in mind, there's a lot of disinformation out there on the internet that's been purposely played. So, you know, you have to kind of dig. And so I put it up on www.thewebmatrix.net and see how this whole thing got to be the way it is today and why this rogue group, this cabal, have basically taken our legal constitutional government out of the loop back during the Eisenhower era back in 1954. You know, even starting back in the 1950s with Alan Dulles as working with OSS and CIA, started Operation Mockingbird with all the relations, you know, with the mainstream media, started to create this matrix of perception that, you know, in other words, they go in and affect not only the mainstream media with their journalists that are non-official covers, you know, for the CIA. In other words, they write stories for the CIA, but the CIA will disavow any knowledge of them if they're ever busted. The education that's been purposely rewritten to hide what actually happened back in World War II by the Rockefeller Foundation. This happened back in 1946. And our entertainment industry that's been with the Hollywood liaisons with the CIA, starting in 1951 with Project Dove, which was basically to alter anything having to do with extraterrestrials, UFOs, the moon, or anything of that nature. They have their people go in and modify the scripts. And since the day the Earth stood still in 51, every single extraterrestrial movie you've seen has been altered with the intent of putting a certain what they call the engineering of consent. Basically, the CIA works with the Tavistock Institute and thousands of think tanks in order to carefully engineer and craft the perception that, and you know, this was back in the, before the end of the war, the Nazis had what they called a plan called Dulkenschallenskrieg, which translates to worldview warfare. In other words, they were planning on infiltrating into the United States, which they effectively did with the help of Alan Dulles, into the CIA and NASA with Paperclip, and create this, what they call a matrix of perception, so that they could continue on with their secret breakaway civilization with trillions of dollars being funneled into super advanced technologies while the rest of the world is running on oil and believing we need to go to the moon using rockets and so forth and so on. And so, you know, all of us have been born into this indoctrinated reality that is which is sad, because, you know, you think about how this would change the world. You know when Eisenhower warned about beware of the misplaced powers and the unwarranted influences within the industrial military complex, he was referring to the Majestic 12 operations that have basically seized control. And he had, you know, Nelson Rockefeller, who funded his campaign, reorganized the whole thing, which basically took our legal constitutional government out of the loop. Kennedy was attempting to gain control again, but, you know, an assassination directive was written up by the Majestic group, and, you know, what happened with him. So, you know, it's sad, though, Dr. J, because, you know, there's a world that that doesn't need oil, doesn't need dangerous Fukushima kind of nuclear power plants leaking. You know, we don't even need roads. There's anti-gravity. You know, for over a decade after, you know, the mainstream media basically sanitizes all this stuff out, I volunteered with Dr. Greer to meet with scientists and inventors, and we had a database of about 300. And I, you know, traveled all over the world, you know, down the Dominican Republic. This one inventor had an energy device, and CI guys were there before us and told them, "This works, you're dead." And so, you know, I've seen things work, and I've seen horrible things happen with people. I've heard one horror story after another. A lot of the scientists have had their laboratories cleaned out, but most of them received what's called a national security order. National security order is basically a gag order that you, whatever invention you come up with that has a solution to, you know, like a free energy or anti-gravity or anything along that line, there appears to be what was released recently, the secret program that's in the U.S. Patent Office that's called the Sensitive Application Warning System. And what that does is any inventor that comes up with a solution, it's like an automatic through the national security apparatus, gets issued one of these national security orders. I put one up on the website so people can see what they look like. Basically, they say because it has a, your invention has a possible detriment to the national security, everybody who you've shared this invention with, we need to know about, and you cannot say this, you cannot talk about it, you cannot do anything. And so far, over 5,100 solutions that could get us off of oil, nuclear and coal and other obsolete dangerous technologies have been suppressed in this manner. So it's like they hold the whole world captive with still making money off of these obsolete technologies while they have this breakaway civilization that, as Ben Rich said back in 93, anything you can imagine we already know how to do, but it would take an act of God to ever get it out to benefit humanity. And that's the reason why I do these shows, is because, you know, the people have the right to know the truth, and humanity can do a lot better than being completely interfered with by this cabal group.
Well, you know, this cabal group, as you mentioned, using obsolete technologies. For instance, what we're using with, we've seen so much transformation. We've gotten through the iPhone, we have regular cell phone, to phones with cameras in there and calculators, to now full iPhones where you're playing with different apps, which would have been completely crazy 50 years ago. And yet the cars we drive, we're still using 150-year-old technology, internal combustion. And if you want to talk about burning chemicals to create thrust, you can go back 1,000 years plus to China, ancient China, yet we're still using this. Aside from the price tag, the fact that they can't charge us, do you think that's the only reason, or is there another reason you think that the cabal is hiding this from us?
I think they have more money than they know what to do with, you know, through their unacknowledged sources, you know, that they funnel into these unacknowledged special access projects. You know, unacknowledged means that it doesn't matter, as we have proof of two presidential administrations were denied access. The whole disclosure project happened because a CIA director was denied access. Ever since Eisenhower, they basically insulated themselves from any kind of overview by Congress or any authority of the president. They have completely insulated themselves in what Richard Dolan terms as a breakaway civilization, which is a pretty accurate term. And they have advanced technologies across the board, you know, a secret space program. You know, we haven't even needed roads. You know, we could retrofit all these dangerous nuclear power plants with zero point energy systems that, you know, we could, you know, repopulate areas that you can't even live in because of the cost of energy in order to desalinate water. Everything you can imagine on life on Earth could be affected by the release of these technologies for people to be able to use instead of, I think it's, to answer your question, I think it's more about maintaining control. And this global elite, you know, there's always been people throughout history that felt like they are the, you know, royalty or whatever, the entitled few that would make the decisions for the rest of humanity, and that they kind of view humanity as just as their resource to do what they choose to do, and you got that mindset going on. And I think you know, a lot of people think it's a bit psychopathic, you know, some of this stuff. But, you know, they get into positions of power. And, you know, you have to wonder about the, you know, the coincidences of all the secret societies that Kennedy warned about that have infiltrated. And all the people who are like high-level 33rd degree Freemasons, and you know, and the secret societies were kind of like a chain of command, pyramidal structure. In other words, the higher levels give orders to the lower levels, and the lower levels don't know what's going on, you know. But at the higher levels, it's like an inner circle; they know what's going on. But anyway, I won't go into all that. But you know, there seems to be definitely an orchestrated. And there seems to be factions within this group, you know, that, you know, you hear the names Rothschilds, Rockefellers, Morgans, you know, the Nazis, you know, all this kind of seems to culminate in kind of a group cabal interest that is somehow working with each other within these black projects, in which you know, using national security, you know, as Edward Snowden says, you know, there's basically two governments. There's one that we believe that we elect, and there's the other one that's operating in the shadows, the shadow government behind it. And, you know, this happened back in the, even back in the end of World War II, where there was two CIAs. One was, you know, hunting down Nazis, and the other one was recruiting them. And so it seems like there was an effort for the cabal to slip in. And initially, it seems like secret societies gave them the perfect cover, you know, in order to do their operations that they planned. But when they created the intelligence agencies back in 47, you know, the Roswell event and National Security Act and all that going on, it gave them the perfect cover. Now nobody can look into what they're doing, but they have they bring in trillions of dollars, you know, in their black budget, but they can do anything and basically say, well, you don't have a need to know, and it's under for the good of national security. So that's the situation we have today.
Go ahead, Johnny.
Yeah, I was going to say, good evening to you, Dan. It's John in London. To answer that last question, I think corporations and private interests seem to be the real sort of secret government rather than our own governments that we elect. And I think we need to delve into more into that sort of background of things. Where was the ship that you worked on or was on in the ocean when the UFOs were playing a role in the situation? That was back in 69, I believe you said. Was that part of anything to do with the Annan Arbon, which was the German program that was going on from sort of 46, 47.
I was working at the Naval Communication Station in San Francisco, Rough and Ready Island. It was the busiest communication facility on the planet. It was a USNS ship, which is basically owned by the Navy. It's like a support supply ship, you know, for the Navy. And it was off the coast of Alaska. And, you know, I was a high-speed code operator. You know, it was like primitive communications back then when the atmospheric conditions didn't allow regular teletype signal to come in. They had to do Morse code, you know, and so I was a certified high-speed code operator taking the message. But, you know, I want to say your earlier comment is absolutely right. It went into the private hands of the, you know, the corporations were reverse engineering this stuff, as, you know, Colonel Corso testified. I have a little short audio clip on General Lovkin, who was on Eisenhower's staff, that talked about what happened going into the hands of the corporations, if I can play that.
Absolutely. Let's hear it.
But what happened was Eisenhower got sold out. I think that he realized that all of a sudden this matter is going into the control of corporations. He realized that he was losing control. He realized that the phenomenon of whatever it was that we were faced with was not going to be in the best hands, and that those were as far as I can remember, that was the expression that was used. It's not going to be in the best hands.
And it isn't. He's absolutely right. It is not in the best hands. I actually have this question. I want to see, it's actually more of a I don't want to say belief, but what I'm starting to lean towards. 50, 60, 70 years ago, crash and retrievals went to the military hands, Wright-Patterson or the Nevada test site, known as Area 51. But I'm wondering now if they're all in corporate hands, which is why we'll never get them out. What do you think?
Well, the corporations that were all tied into this. Interestingly, you know, before we went to Washington, I sat for 4 hours with the president of Lockheed International and watched the 4 hours of the executive briefing document that we provided to, you know, meetings that we had with senators and congressmen up on Capitol Hill after we did the National Press Club. I was trying to get him because, you know, the Lockheed was heavily involved in all this. You know, there's CIA contracts, but unfortunately, he wasn't willing to, but he was very interested, you know, what was watching. But, yeah, the corporations, you know, are owned by some of the wealthiest people in the world, as you know. And, you know, even back before the end of the war, the Nazis had a huge amount of money. And Martin Bormann, with his help of his inside contacts within the United States, they purchased over 750 corporations. So you have to wonder how many of those corporations were involved in the actual reverse engineering, you know, Raytheon, Lockheed, Science Applications International, you know, all the different corporations, which, you know, Eisenhower was pissed, you know, because he let Rockefeller restructure the whole operation, which put Alan Dulles as MJ-1. And then in 55, they set up, you know, Area 51 and do their operations with the alien stuff over at S4. And, you know, we had a witness came out in 2005 that Dolan interviewed that he was going in there and threatened to invade Area 51 with the military out of Colorado if they didn't share their activities or what they're doing. But, you know, by the time end of his, you know, his farewell speech that he gave, and then he briefed Kennedy on the whole situation, and Kennedy was well aware going into the presidency, you know, being an office of naval intelligence and very close friend of James Forrestal, who was one of the original Majestic members that they murdered because he was threatening to, you know, reveal the truth to the public. But, you know, so, you know, you have to look back in order to figure out how did we get to where we are today. You know, almost you have to look back through history and kind of trace it through all the little leaked documents and whistleblowers.
Some people think that ETs are there to help us. Others think that the ETs are controlling the government and running the secrecy. And because apparently someone else recently said, Jim Mars, not too long ago when we spoke to him, said that there's supposed to be this universal understanding that to not interfere with the species evolution. What do you think of who's really in charge? Who do this cabal answer to? Are they in cahoots with ETs?
I don't know. I try to base everything that I know, you know, based on authenticated leaked documents or whistleblower testimonies. I mean, you know, for 500 witnesses, they all be making this stuff up, you know, is pretty non-real, you know. So I would say, you know, there appears to be a lot of leaks that says there's joint alien military operations going on. One of the witnesses, Clifford Stone, said when he got out in 1989 that they already categorized 57 different species. So, you know, you have a lot of different agendas, you know. I would say that the fact that we're having this conversation means that they didn't all want to act like they do in Hollywood, you know, come down and blast us and Independence Day and all of that. I would say that's more of a psyops thing they want to put into the subconscious of everybody, you know, to use fear of the extraterrestrial reality. But, you know, you hear of programmed life forms. I mean, the technologies that they have hidden away, they've kept us so retarded, you know, from the advancements in sciences that have been going on in the black world that you know, somebody looking into it, you know, it actually does keep its own best secrecy, because when you get into the truth about it all, it becomes so bizarre that you try to explain it to somebody and they think, oh, yeah, right, you know.
Dan, it's John in London again. Do you think it has anything to do with the occult, you know, which is almost like a taboo? So when people go to talk about who's really controlling it, it's so taboo that people don't really want to go there. And also, I think about with what you've talked about this evening about how we think our generals and our armies are in control. But the language that we hear today isn't about sort of army. It's about space command. And I think of Jack Parsons and his occult influence on the jet propulsion labs, and also the influence of the rocket engine, where he designed the rocket and the actual infrastructure of this solid booster system was based on a pentagram system as well. You know, can you sort of give us any more information on that? Is it something that you've come across, or what's your feeling on it, Dan?
Oh yeah, one of my favorite areas of research. Absolutely, yeah. The occult is deeply embedded all this stuff. You know, the Nazis were heavy into the occult, obviously, and the Rockefeller Foundation took all that out of the history books. You know, you look at all the people that, you know, you get into the high levels of secret societies, you know, like the Freemasons and, you know, I've been in the Rosicrucian since 76, you know, studying, you know, teachings from way back. The thing is that when you get into higher levels of understanding of the occult, which means hidden, you know, doesn't mean necessarily, you know, satanic sacrifices or anything like that. It means that you have a greater understanding of the reality of the space-time matrix and consciousness and the whole interface with it. In fact, I think they're rather afraid right now because as Zabrinsky, you know, the National Security Advisor, said, you know, there's a because of the alternative media, you know, thank you, Dr. J, there's this global awakening happening right now. And, you know, science has shown that we're all, you know, connected to a collective consciousness that helps create this agreed upon reality, and that it has a holographic nature, and that it indicates that each one of us has an ability to affect this collective depending on what we believe and what we give our consent to. And this is why I believe the occult operations are working in a sense to create this perception matrix, or like in the movie The Matrix, through the mainstream media, the education, and the entertainment industries, that what they do is, as they did back in the 40s, they specialized on the engineering of consent. So, you know, if the CIA which is operating, which is in control of the mainstream media with their think tanks, is engineering consent. In other words, so long as we believe there is justification for doing certain wars or doing certain actions, it's very carefully crafted to engineer the consent in our minds. And I believe that if we take away that consent, where we no longer, and we actually mentally say, no, I don't give my consent to this, and you see a pharmaceutical commercial, you say, oh, that's bull, you know. Oh, yeah, but, you know, when you see things that you know are wrong, and you give it consent, you're actually participating in the false reality matrix, you could say, but...
Other people are saying that, you know, that if anything, the military are working with subliminals and this new technology of, you know, literally like how we used to be influenced by the television. A few seconds, you're sort of zoned into it and it sort of grabs you, and advertising use it, you know, all day long. But the military now are literally using subliminal. So they're not working with the conscious mind. They're now working with the subconscious mind. And their intention is to try and win us over. So just like a politician will tell you he wants to win your hearts and your minds, I think it's the same thing. Can you enlighten us on any of that sort of understanding?
Well, there's a, what do they call it? I think it's spread spectrum or something. It's a way to, with the new high definition televisions. They use this stuff back in the 90s where, you know, the conscious mind, it looks at something and it says, oh, no, that's not right. No, I don't agree with that or this and that. But the subconscious mind, it accepts everything. And so long as you can slip everything into the subconscious mind, I mean, look at Hollywood. Look at the look at the amount of violence of people, the program of people killing and hurting other humans, constantly being barraged, usually delivered through a myriad of crime dramas. You're constantly seeing imagery of people hurting and killing each other. Constantly on the movie, entertainment, and everything. All of this is, I believe, orchestrated in a way that was
like a divide and conquer.
Yeah, yeah, and you know, early sexual stimulation they found, you know, makes you know, children, like neurotic children, easily susceptible to you know, domination and control by an authority. So it all goes back to Tavistock and their interface with their thousands and billions of dollars and think tanks working in unison with the CIA and Stanford Research.
It's called Agenda 21. Do you know about Agenda 21?
Yes, I've looked into it a little bit.
And it's basically a UNESCO program that runs all around the world with every school, and it talks about taking our children as citizens and unteaching them what our parents have taught them, so that we can introduce them into a new society, a new world order, in a sense. And it's a sort of doctoring program that runs, but in the education system, the famous Pink Floyd song, The Wall, you know, teacher, leave them kids alone. It was sort of based on that sort of understanding from the 60s.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are waking up and are becoming aware of this reality. I mean, you see it everywhere. This global awakening is happening right now. Most people understand that we're not alone in the universe. I mean, there's thousands of UFO reports that get reported. I've had, you know, had them fly 100 feet over my head. I've seen them a number of times, whether they're ETVs, like extraterrestrial, or alien reproduction vehicles, which we know they have. You know, you don't know which is, because some of the technology is so advanced. You know, even after the press club, we had Gary McKinnon over there in the UK that hacked in and saw they had non-terrestrial officers, you know, in some of the NASA.
To put that non-terrestrial officer into perspective, if anyone's ever seen, you know, the movie Close Encounters, when you see Richard Dreyfuss go in there and then get accepted, and he puts a red suit on and black glasses and a cap, and they all walk into the ship, they're the off-world officers. And you know, you had the famous astronaut, I forgot his name, Buzz Aldrin. And he says, look, you know, that he slipped up once and said when Buzz was on Mars, and he went, oh, I meant the moon. He made a statement like that, this astronaut. And then you've got like Buzz Aldrin himself talking about sort of the moon Phobos, or one of these moons around Mars having a monolith on there. And he went into quite some detail about it. So I think it's quite possible that we do have off-world officers. You know, back to you, Dan.
Yeah, most likely. You have to imagine, they had technology of flying discs back in the 40s. So, the technology is so far in advance. And I think people are starting to wake up and see that. The trouble is, they have their grips on the media, which most of the people, watch television and whatnot. They have their interface with Hollywood, and they have with the education system. You can be on the media and they'll sanitize you out. You can go on Capitol Hill. I've met with senators and congresspeople. Basically, nobody wants to touch it. They're basically all out of the loop. And so they don't have access to any of this stuff. And so this operation has pretty much insulated itself from anybody going in and trying to, upset the cart on the whole thing. It seems that the only way that, in my own research, is more going into the occult, I guess, is has to do with affecting the collective consciousness. And for people, to do their own research, you can look at my article on thewebmatrix.net and, compare, do your own. There's so much disinformation out there, but there's a lot of hardcore, solid information out there that shows this reality. And once a person becomes aware that this reality is something that they've been, it's like, what was it? It was Robert F. Kennedy. He said, I found out something I never knew. I found out that my world was not the real world, unquote. And I think that's what is going to have to happen to a certain percentage of the population that will kick this, what do they call it? Like the 100th monkey, it's like critical mass, where it's going to be such an awakening that the deceptions are going to become transparent and no longer going to be acceptable. And people are going to start saying, hey, it's time that we let go of nuclear power plants and gasoline and and all these things that we've been falsely indoctrinated into, and let's work together as one human race and expose the things that have been done for the few that have affected the many on this planet, for the good of all humanity and for the future of. For the future of Earth.
We got about 15 minutes left or so I want to ask you this question. If you want to go into other specific points outside of what we ask you, by all means. What do you think it's going to take for us to tip over the lid of disclosure to finally, because I don't think POTUS is ever going to get on the podium in front of the White House lawn and just say, oh, we've been lying to you for 70 plus years. We have crashed disks and bodies and have proof, and a lot of people died, and here you go. I don't think that's going to happen, but some people believe. What do you think it's going to take to tip the bucket over?
Well, it's kind of interesting. Bodessa, talked about, his regret as not having disclosure, that tweet that just came out. And also Jaime Musan, who I was with in Mexico, he's coordinating an event on May 5th to show these Roswell slides. You've heard about that, where
Yes. They
have these authenticated 1947 slides showing pictures of President, it was General Eisenhower at the time, and showing the recoveries of the alien beings from the Roswell crash. And this is like highly authenticated. So that's coming out on May 5th this year. So all these different little elements are like leaking out all over the place that will help force disclosure. I know Stephen Bassett's been working diligently, to try to do it through regular traditional channels. I think it's just going to be a collective critical mass awakening that people just aren't going to buy into it anymore.
Earlier, when we were talking about propaganda and other media subliminal messaging. The way the National Press Club, the Disclosure Project, happened in 2001, that wasn't the way it was portrayed to the media, right? You've shown in the past two different ways they've reported on it. Do you still have those?
Yeah. Well, you know, here we're talking about, you know, alien base on the other side of the moon, 57 in space, and all that stuff. Here's if you want to hear it, it's about a minute and a half on the CNN report.
Sure.
Okay, here's CNN, and notice it's very carefully articulated to make it sound as though we're wanting to have a congressional reality on, is there life on other planets, and are UFOs are real? Here we go.
Life on other planets? Some former military and government personnel say they have proof there is. Elaine Quijano explains.
We've seen the photographs and heard the stories of what some say is evidence of UFOs. Now a group of scientists, former Air Force and FAA officials, is lending its voice to the argument that we are not alone. Dr. Stephen Greer heads up the Disclosure Project, a group that compiles information from people who say they've encountered extraterrestrial forms of life.
We can establish through this testimony that these objects of extraterrestrial origin have been tracked on radar going thousands of miles per hour, stopping and making right-hand turns.
Since 1993, Dr. Greer says he has videotaped testimony from more than 100 people about what they say are close encounters. People like retired Navy Commander Pilot Graham Bethune, who believes he saw a UFO 50 years ago while flying to Newfoundland.
Then it appeared over to the right and moved out slowly and flew with us. It was still not at our altitude, but we could see the shape of it. It had a dome.
In addition, the Disclosure Project says it has documents supporting its case, including FAA records and CIA memos.
What do members plan to do with their information? They hope Congress and President Bush take notice. They want to see congressional hearings into the matter, despite criticism from skeptics.
Those that don't want to believe you will never believe you anyway, so it doesn't matter. It doesn't change the truth.
A spokesperson for the Senate Science, Technology, and Space Committee says no congressional hearings are planned right now. Elaine Quijano, CNN.
Hey, CNN, very careful. CNN's like a flagship of media companies. They very carefully crafted this. So the average person listening back, listening to news, says, oh, wow, you know, they want to have a congressional hearing on the reality of UFOs. That's the perception you get, right?
Hey, but that's not the truth.
That's not the truth, because what they do is they carefully, very carefully chose certain kind of words and certain kind of things that he was saying, and went through the first hour, by the way, which was jammed by the NSA. It was the biggest event in the National Press Club for 20 years. We had 250,000 people logged on. They couldn't hear what was being said. And so this is just an example of, they looked through the whole speech because there was explosive stuff about CIA directors being denied access and, you know, reverse engineering this technologies and everything. And so they had to go through the entire speech and pick out one little sentence where he says these objects of extraterrestrials are these objects of extraterrestrial origin have been tracked on radar going thousands of miles per hour, stopping and making right-hand turns. Watch what he says immediately after saying right-hand turns.
We can establish through this testimony that these objects of extraterrestrial origin have been tracked on radar going thousands of miles per hour, stopping and making right-hand turns, that they use anti-gravity propulsion systems, which we have already figured out how they work in classified projects in the United States, Great Britain, and elsewhere, that these objects have landed on terra firma, at times have been disabled, and have been retrieved specifically by teams within the United States, that extraterrestrial life forms have been retrieved and their vehicles have been taken and studied thoroughly for at least 50 years. We can prove through the testimony and documents that we will be presenting that this subject has been hidden from members of Congress and at least two presidential administrations, and that the Constitution of the United States has been subverted by the growing power of these classified projects, and that this is a danger to the national security.
They were cherry-picking. They were cherry-picking what they wanted the audience to hear, CNN.
It's carefully engineered. Yeah, yes. Absolutely. The perception is very carefully engineered so that the people have no idea of what, these witnesses, each willing to break their national security oath, each willing to testify, each one stated after their testimony that we are willing to testify under oath before Congress of what we're saying is true. And the explosive testimonies that were, for example, John Callahan, she says, you know, despite the criticism of skeptics, and he says those who want to believe you don't want to believe you. He doesn't say they don't say anything about the CIA swearing him to secrecy and confiscating all the information that he had. But he fortunately had backups and brought it with him. So
wasn't he the head of the FAA? You know, he was the chief of the FAA, and he had this report on his table and was told that he couldn't use it. But it's amazing because these people are very, very credible people, and it's very disturbing to think that media can mix words and downplay, the importance and the realities of these things. So yeah, it's dangerous stuff.
Yeah, I've had so many experiences with the media, firsthand, and being an ex-ABC newsman, not that I'm been a big TV anchor man or anything like that, but I just paid attention, I paid attention to how they interviewed, what was said, and then what comes out on the air afterward. I have one example. I was unfortunately unable to get any other examples, but this is about 1 minute long. This is just an example of one TV station's coverage when we're up in Portland, Oregon, if I may play it.
Sure.
Forum on alternative energy tonight is out of this world, really. The Disclosure Project is a nonprofit research effort that identifies top secret military and government witnesses to UFO and extraterrestrial events. Project members say the government is hiding information about energy sources derived from UFOs, technology that they say could help us here on Earth.
This is an enormous issue where technologies have been illegally sequestered from the public that could completely solve the environmental problems as well as get us off of fossil fuels.
He says these technologies include anti-gravity propulsion systems, zero point, and over unity energy. Lots of people showed up for that forum. Kurt.
Blazer fans, your long wait between playoff games is almost over. They finally tip off game 2 tomorrow night.
Trend that might work in Portland's favor, huh?
I'm doing Kurt's thing.
Yeah, give me something, please. I'm dying
UFO,
out here.
UFOs and energy. Let's get to the big story.
Let's go to Shaq. He's an extraterrestrial.
There you go.
No kidding.
He solved the world's power problems.
That's right. All right.
This is called what? The giggle factor, and basically it works to keep it because people have been indoctrinated from this false reality that when you start to hear about extraterrestrial zero point energy and all this stuff like that, it's so far that it evokes this nervous laughter because it's so far removed from the indoctrinated reality. And so this is what you get. Every single network that every major city that we traveled across the entire whole United States on a grassroots movement, since the mainstream media wasn't covering it, even the network affiliates make fun of it. So it's an orchestrated effort. And we even were told, like in San Francisco, we found out they were told to make fun of it. So it's very, very well, they keep a lid on it.
We got a little under 5 minutes left. We could continue to talk about the ridicule factor unless there's any other points you wanted to drive home to the audience.
Giggle factor you're talking, Dr. J?
Yeah, because the CIA apparently, they've made that a point. Some people even linked up the National Enquirer, the Weekly World News that shows alien meets Hillary Clinton or those articles. And what they would do is they'd mix in a real story with all those fake ones to ridicule it. So it's been in place. But I wanted to ask you if you wanted to speak about that or if there's any other points you want to drive home in these last couple of minutes we have left.
Sure, on the webmatrix.net, I have a bunch of examples. the man who owned the Weekly World News was trained at the CIA counterintelligence. You know, it was like Hillary has an alien baby and Clinton's a new ambassador for Mars. And, you know, oh, and they found Hitler trying to work with Saddam Hussein. And, you know, all these little discrediting stories is basically what the CIA calls DDT operations, which means decoy, distract, and trash. So you set up some ridiculous story. These right out to your checkout stands of your major markets and things, you have these tabloids. And so the people look at that, and it's very effective because they think, oh, that's just stupid nonsense. And so when somebody begins to talk about it, they just automatically in their mind just think of it, oh, this is silly ridiculousness. And so it works.
One thing I've noticed is obviously the Weekly World News is gone, and now we have less and less skeptics showing up on UFO TVs. Do you think that's big progress for us, or that was just going to happen because they finally realized their rational and reasoning wasn't right?
Well, the mainstream media is a powerful force to be reckoned with. You know, it's getting a lot of information. A lot of people are coming out. At the same time, they're very worried about it, and they're even hiring people to, you know, military sock puppets, trolls and shills by the CIA and NSA that are out there putting, information to counter the information that people are sharing and saying, oh, no, that's all nonsense. That's not real. You know, eat your Monsanto GMO corn. It's good for you. It's here's the proof, you know. And, you know, it just there's a war going on for your mind right now. And they are trying to do damage control on the Internet with these perception management teams. The alternative media is a very powerful outlet right now that's letting myself, which I'm a very minor, insignificant whistleblower in the whole scheme of things. But, the more of us talk about this and share it and look at the core evidence, I think the more awareness it's going to bring.
I absolutely agree. We need more whistleblowers and more people to be talking about it, especially if you're a witness out there. Now is the time to come forward. Dan Willis, you've been an excellent guest. As always, we've had a fascinating time with you. Do you have any final statements you'd like to give to anyone?
Check out the article I had to write, which is at www.thewebmatrix.net. And, you know, don't believe anything you see. Just, you know, do your own logical research and compare the facts and make your own decision and then share the truth, whatever you find out.
And that was everybody. Dan Willis, he witnessed at the Disclosure Project held by Dr. Greer 2001. Sadly, not too long after that was 9/11. Stay tuned for Timothy Good, an hour with him from London. He won last year the British Lifetime Ufologist Award, Lifetime Achievement Award. And of course, he's written a new book called Earth Alien Enterprise, which you'll hear so much more. And of course, check out our website, drjradiolive.com, where you could see who's coming on next, as well as you could make contacts so you can have particular chance to speak with certain people. And we do take guest requests. And of course, older videos do get uploaded. We are swamped by them, but each and every one will be there soon. So everybody stay tuned and you'll have another great hour. And again, check out Dan's website, thewebmatrix.net, and of course, drjradiolive.com. And we'll be right back in 2 short minutes. Welcome back to Researchers on a Mission Radio. I'm your host, Dr. J, and of course, my co-host, all the way from London, Johnny Webb. Of course, we have another incredible show for you today, bringing you one of my favorite ufologists, somebody who has taught me literally for the last 25 years on this subject, whose integrity is so high that he's able to gain access to so many witnesses that over the years, everything he said has pretty much been verified. And this is why I always look to this person for information. And on top of that, not only he's written a new book, he also received the British Ufologist Award for the Lifetime Achievement Award by UFO Truth Magazine. Without further ado, let's bring on the one and only Timothy Good. Mr. Good, welcome to the show.
Good evening, sir.
Oh, it's always a pleasure to speak to you. Last time, of course, we ran out of time. I know it's going to happen again today. I can go on for weeks in a row and we'd still run out of time. You're such an encyclopedia of information, and that's why I'm just delighted to have you, and the listeners are delighted to hear you again. I guess let's just jump into it. Your new book, Earth and Alien Enterprise, just recently we interviewed Paula Harris, and Paula Harris on another show, she said two books that she would recommend for all those people out there who are interested in ufology and want to learn. One of the books was Earth and Alien Enterprise. So she truly holds you in high revere. And I have to agree with her fully, because that book covers everything going back to some of the first case of missing time to one of the earliest landings that was documented going back to the 30s, pre-World War II. Everything that goes against what the debunkers are saying. Let's just start with the Dvorak case, 1932. Can you tell us how you came about that case and a little bit about it?
Well, I was told about it by a friend, and I thought I really need to meet this guy. So I made a special trip to Montana, I believe it was, and I was able to interview him at great length. And, I learned a great deal from him. I found him very, very convincing indeed. He has a very interesting background, I believe, in naval intelligence. He was more than a nodding acquaintance with one of the American presidents, George Bush. According to my information, I've seen. I have a copy of a letter from Bush to Leo, which is quite revealing in a way.
I'm assuming you're referring to Bush Senior, right? George Herbert Walker Bush.
Yes.
I have always thought he's in the know for several reasons. One being the director of the CIA from, I think, 78 to 79. And, of course, just being privy to all sorts of information, of course, being vice president and then becoming president. Why do you think what was the connection between him and Leo Dvorak? Why did he send them that letter? Do you know why?
I honestly don't know. Just that Dvorak had some very, very good connections, and he didn't discuss all of them. He obviously had, I would say, some very high security clearances.
Well, you brought up two good talking points, right, just based on the statement. One, presidents, and another, government connections. Let's go back to the 50s. George Adamski. A lot of people are either with him or against him, in the sense that some people don't believe him, other people saying this is one of the first earliest contact cases where we were being warned about destruction on Earth, that we're going to destroy ourselves and so on and so forth. This man, despite what anybody will say out there, had an ordnance card, something that is
a United States government ordnance department card, which gave him access to all military bases throughout the world, not just the United States. Which I think says a lot, and that in itself, I think, is very significant.
I would agree so. As a matter of fact, he also met with Pope John Paul this, or was it John Paul I or II? I'm not quite sure
which, but he had private meetings, classified meetings, with two popes. That's for sure. And I have named them in my book. I can't mention, off the record. I can't recall absolutely everything, but there were two meetings with popes, and perhaps even three, over the years.
Well, despite what people say, this is proof by him having a United States government department of ordnance card that
ordnance
allowed
department, yes.
Ordnance department that allowed him access to bases around the world. He had meetings with, I'm assuming, with presidents. And
he did. I mean, a friend of mine was with George Adamski, a lady called Madeleine Roedefer, and she saw him enter the White House through a special door. You don't just walk into the White House. And she witnessed Adamski going in for a meeting with whichever the president was at that time.
And based on all the information we have about George Adamski, clearly the reason why he would have such access is because of his connections to these extraterrestrials that were visiting him. If he didn't have it, then they would have never given it to him. So the debunkers out there who are trying to say that there was nothing to that case are absolutely wrong if they're not looking at all the evidence. Now, we're talking about presidents. Let's go talk about two in particular that I wanted to ask you. First, Kennedy and Eisenhower. Maybe we should start with the older one first, Eisenhower. These days, versus 30 years ago, more and more information has been coming forward about him meeting with the ETs. And you even write in your book, there was a point where he disappeared for 36 hours, said he had a cold, yet some witnesses showed or was there at Holloman Air Force Base for a prearranged meeting with extraterrestrials.
That's right. I mean, Eisenhower, there was a famous press conference in Washington, D.C. on February the 9th, 1955, announcing his trip the next day to Georgia for a few days quail hunting, in quotes. And on February the 11th, I mean, 2 days later, it was reported that the president had come down with a cold, and he was not seen again for 36 hours, having secretly been flown in Air Force One to Holloman Air Force Base, New Mexico. And in fact, that happened on two occasions at Holloman Air Force Base in 1955. And my understanding, in my book, I've named witnesses who actually saw this craft come in and leave. Air Force One was parked in a certain area of Holloman Air Force Base at the time, and this craft came down and landed near Air Force One, Eisenhower's own plane. This was a Constellation aircraft, and apparently he went on board the UFO for half an hour, for 30 minutes, but nothing has ever been revealed about what exactly was discussed, which is a shame, but a lot of additional information has come to light over the years.
Some people suggest the meeting was for a treaty or an agreement that we would stop nuclear weapons or testing them, making them in exchange for technology. Do you know anything about that, or is that just...
I don't know for sure, John, but it makes absolute sense. I think you've hit the nail on the head.
I would agree so. And one thing that always caught my attention, 1961, January, when he was leaving office and he made his speech for outgoing at the office of the presidency, he warned us, beware of the military-industrial complex. Now, I took it, and correct me if I'm wrong, was that he was in the loop after Truman gave him the briefing documents. He met with these ETs. He probably did a whole lot more with the technology. But I was under the impression that the reason he warned us of the military-industrial complex is because he was shut out. Do you think that's possibly the case?
I think it's possible. I don't know for sure. But what I do know for sure is that Eisenhower had several meetings with extraterrestrials, which were witnessed by dozens of people. There was one in Los Angeles. There was another one at Holloman, probably two at Holloman. And I think in total there were probably about four or five or even six meetings that were arranged at United States Air Force bases with President Eisenhower. Meeting together with the aliens.
You're absolutely right with the California. Being a California resident myself, I remember being almost 30 years ago, first hearing, and of course, as the years progressed and more people wrote about it, one of the meetings other than Holloman, just like you said, in California, was at then Muroc Airfield, now known as Edwards. Do you think it was different species, different types of ETs he was meeting or was they possibly, I mean, again, this is speculation, or were they meeting to follow up on the last agreement for maybe more technology for us and maybe for them to kind of put us in our place for using new weapons?
Well, all I know is that I think the meeting in 1954 at what I believe is Edwards Air Force Base, it was actually arranged, and the aliens landed several craft, and Eisenhower was there with quite a number of his officials, and he was quite shocked by the whole thing. I mean, the aliens said they didn't want to. In the end, they said they didn't want to cause too much trouble. They appreciated that this would cause a lot of shock on Earth if they were to actually show themselves to the whole planet, and they agreed with what Eisenhower thought about that. But so that was quite something, I think.
Well, now. It's established through several sources, several witnesses, that Eisenhower clearly was not quail hunting, or in this,
no.
Exactly. or in the case of the Edwards, what happened is apparently he claimed to have an emergency dentist.
Yes.
But
yeah.
At the same time, when the wife of the dentist was interviewed, she says she specifically remembers her husband being Eisenhower's dentist, but yet she has no recollection whatsoever of him meeting, of the dentist and the president meeting during those days, meaning that she's implying that it was purely fabricated, which goes to show again that he was just covering it up. Now, speaking on presidents, right after Eisenhower made the outgoing speech warning us of the military-industrial complex, he went right into the fact that Kennedy became president. Do you know of any meetings between Kennedy and these extraterrestrials, or was he briefed to the same level?
My understanding is that George Adamski arranged a meeting for Kennedy with some of the alleged space people, and he was taken on board one of the large cigar-shaped craft for quite some time. That is my understanding, and Adamski arranged that for him. As we discussed earlier, Adamski had a United States government ordnance card. He was in a very good position to make such an arrangement.
And again, now this is pure speculation. Some people have claimed that one of the reasons Kennedy was assassinated, which 90% of the American public does not believe the original story that Oswald was the lone gunman, and even a higher percentage of the world doesn't believe it. Do you?
No, I think there were quite a few gunmen around. I mean, you've got the Grassy Knoll for starters.
Yes.
I mean, that was. I think they were involved, and I mean, it just wasn't the single shooter. That's for sure.
You're absolutely right. And if you
now, I have to say that it wasn't just the alien situation, but Kennedy was very unpopular with all sorts of people, and there were all sorts of plans to have him put away with. So, you know, there were lots of candidates for the assassination. Put it that way.
Yeah, like you said, one of the reasons he was unpopular, especially with the military-industrial complex, is because of the fact that he gave a speech not too long before he was assassinated, basically telling the governments of the world to not only stop nuclear weapons, the Soviet Union at the time, but to basically disarm themselves completely, end the armies and end wars. And so that obviously doesn't sit well with a military defense contractor. Now, this goes to my next question. I've been worried that the reason why we're not seeing as much government openness or through Freedom of Information Acts here in the United States giving us actual evidence is the reason that I think is possibly because the artifacts and the crashed flying saucers or crashed retrievals, all those are no longer in the government hands, but possibly in private corporations that don't have to answer to the people. Do you think that's a plausible theory?
I do, and I also think that our own people have been given some of these craft. Gordon Cooper, who I never met, unfortunately, but I corresponded with him, and I think I spoke with him on the phone once, revealed that he was actually flying these craft. And he said, I don't know what it takes, because he was so frustrated at one of the early United Nations meetings dismissing the subject, that he said, what does it take? Do I have to fly one of these craft and land it so that everyone can see in New York? And in front of the United Nations. He actually threatened to do that because he had access. And I can tell you that many of the United States astronauts and perhaps other ones, Soviet, whatever, I don't know, have been flying craft which we have either been given or we have adapted or improved from recovered alien vehicles. But I can tell you for a fact that quite a number of the astronauts have been flying saucers. And in fact, 3 or 4 years ago, I spent quite some time together with my girlfriend in Italy with Stefano Breccia, a great man who was involved in the so-called Amicizia case. And he had actually been in some of these craft, and he had lots of contacts. And there's just no question that these things are very real. And one thing he told me, which I was fascinated by, was that 10 Italian Navy pilots had been flying some of these craft. So quite clearly, we have been given access to these craft, and they're being flown by our people as well as by so-called aliens.
Now, one can assume that if the Italian government has trained people to fly these, that other governments, such as the UK, the US, and maybe Brazil, I don't know who else, but other governments have these same craft.
Sure.
So I really wish Gordon Cooper followed up with his threat, because that would have really raised some eyebrows and ended a lot of the speculation with these debunkers that are always trying to throw a wedge in these facts. Along with a couple more presidents real quick. Well, actually, since we're on Gordon Cooper, let me ask you an astronaut question. In your book, you mentioned that Neil Armstrong, not Buzz Aldrin, Neil Armstrong said that the CIA had him cover up basically what he saw on the moon, which was giant ships that were menacing, to be his exact words.
Absolutely. Yes, this information was passed to a friend of mine, Pamela Hanford, who had been in MI6. And she found herself, I mean, she was at, I would think, a very restricted NASA conference in Italy in 1984. And she gave a short presentation there. She had been with MI6 for considerable time at that stage. And she told me that her room was actually right next to that of both of those astronauts. Neil Armstrong and therefore she was able to converse with them, and they confirmed a lot of things to her. And that was back in May of 1984 at this restricted conference. I knew that lady, and she was very, very credible.
Exactly, and you even talk about, like I said, you mentioned in this book, you mentioned this yourself, and she was MI6. That's an intelligence agency. Someone like
that.
Well,
that's the equivalent. That's the equivalent of the Central Intelligence Agency.
Yeah,
our equivalent of
Exactly. So someone coming from there obviously has the intelligence to get to join that organization, to be recruited, and not to mention the contacts to get to speak to people in high levels, and would possibly be privy to some information such as extraterrestrials. So coming from an MI6 agent versus some random strangers next door, it gives that much more credibility. Now, going back again to the astronauts, I do know that during the space shuttle missions, there were several sightings, and they even started creating code words such as Santa Claus one.
Absolutely correct.
Do you know of other astronauts prior to the space shuttle missions that encountered them, that were going to the moon, maybe in Apollo missions, Apollo 14 or 12? Do you know anything about, did anyone else encounter it? Because it was always my impression that one way or another, they were always seeing something in space.
Quite a number of the astronauts had close encounters with craft. There's no question about that at all.
Now,
it's interesting that one in June, I think it was in 1984, when this friend of mine, Pamela Hanford, who had been with, the long expression is Secret Intelligence Service, MI6, and she was participating in this NASA conference at Anacapri in Italy. She learnt from Neil Armstrong that when he and Buzz Aldrin landed on the moon in July 1969, they encountered large alien spacecraft, which they found menacing. And that's a sort of rumor that goes around, but coming as it does from Pamela Hanford, who I would, you know, she was a very, very credible lady, very well connected. I think that's absolutely the case, and that's why they didn't. Allegedly they didn't. They never went back to the moon. I do not know if that's true, John, but it's possible.
It does make sense. If we were warned off the moon, and obviously our technology has only gotten better since the early 70s, yeah. Why wouldn't we have gone back? So I just was always assumed that we went there, yeah. Something happened, we were told
not. There were others back. There.
Yes, yes. The others there that were there long before us, and we're told that this is sort yeah. of ours. Back to the presidents. Near the end of your book, it's only a short a reference, but it goes back to even George Washington possibly having contact. Do you know, can you elaborate on that a little bit? Or?
Oh, gosh, I wish I could, but I can't. I can't remember the whole event, but I mean, it goes back, it certainly goes back several hundred years, according to what I've published, but I can't remember it word for word exactly what happened, but that is the story at any rate, that there were contacts with George Washington in decades ago.
Two centuries plus ago, actually.
Yes.
It's another president, I guess. We mentioned George Bush. We mentioned Kennedy. We mentioned Eisenhower. Let's talk about Nixon for a second. He was Eisenhower's vice president. He ran against Kennedy, lost. And then, sure enough, 8 years after that, he ran for – and he won. I always thought that he had more information than Johnson or any subsequent presidents just because of the fact that he was privy to all the information that Eisenhower knew. And my impression is because they only serve 4 years and if they're elected to a second term, 8 years, they don't get as much information as someone who's for life in the CIA or NSA. Do you think that he had – because obviously the story of him and showing Jackie Gleason the crash disk. Can you
Jackie
tell us
Gleason
about that?
And, yes, that's right. I mean, she confirmed that her husband had returned from the trip visibly shaken by the experience. Beverly McKittrick, Gleason's wife, confirmed that her husband had returned really shaken by the whole thing.
Now.
And that was in 1973 when Gleason was taken by Nixon to this top secret repository at Homestead Air Force Base, Florida.
And he was known to shake his Secret Service tail, so this just fits perfectly with what I mean. It's fact that he shook his Secret Service tails often, and to get off his back that particular day to show his good friend Jackie proof again just. Everything fits in line. It's not as if it's a record show that he's in another country and yet the story emerges. It just, again, fits perfectly with what's happened. Now, I'm going to change gears a little bit. A lot of talk lately, I don't know if you've heard about this, but right here in California in Malibu, Google Maps, using their, of course, satellites, showed this to the public. Somebody just digging around found right off the coast of Malibu underwater this giant structure with these pillars that I think are about 600 feet tall, and they're equally spaced. And this is, I think it's a mile and a half wide, humongous.
Yes, I've seen pictures of that. I don't know if the pictures are genuine. I'm sure they are, but they do appear to show extraordinary developments, don't they, underwater?
Yeah, absolutely. And the reason why I think they're credible is because they didn't surface from just some regular person who put them on the internet and had photoshopped them. These are official Google Maps. Anybody right there, right now listening can go onto Google, go onto Google Maps and just zoom in on the coast of Malibu and you will see these for yourself. Do you think that this was an extraterrestrial base? Because that's the next subject I'm going to get to is underground. Or do you think it's a United States military base, or maybe a joint?
Well, it could be both.
Yes.
As you've just come out, I think more likely that. I think more likely a joint base.
Do you know of any other joint bases across the world?
No, not offhand. But all I know is that there are many undersea and underground bases around the world. And they have been for a very long time.
And that was going to be my next set of topics. Last time we spoke, we briefly touched on, because we ran out of time, was the underground bases of these various factions of extraterrestrials, and some of them warring with each other, and yet they're living on the same planet, just in different parts. And as you, I think you mentioned last time, some of these bases are several miles wide or long.
Huge. I mean, in the Amicizia case in Italy, this was like in the 1970s and 80s and everything. There were huge underground bases. I mean, they were vast, and the aliens were able to create these things in seconds. They were able to, you know, they had the technology to produce a whole huge area where they could live and their craft and so on and so forth. And then when they left, they could close down the whole thing, you know, within minutes, if not seconds. They had this technology to produce these bases. And in some cases, they were able to produce very small bases in towns and cities, so that they were more able to communicate with some of the people that they were dealing with at that time.
Now, again, this is a huge development, the fact that there's humongous bases that they can build with their technology in an extremely fast amount of time versus what it would take us to construct any base.
Yeah.
And at the same time, there's different factions, so it's not necessarily the
gosh,
same.
Yes, absolutely, and there've been terrible battles, if we're to believe a lot of the information. But I believe some of it because I knew Stefano Breccia, and he was a very, very well genned up gentleman, and I had the greatest respect for him. And he said there were definitely dreadful things going on, you know, with some of the aliens that were very, very peculiar, and there was a battle going on half the time.
And exactly
between aliens.
Yes, that's what we mentioned last time, that these different factions were fighting each other, possibly for control of us, possibly for control of the minerals. And wasn't there something about a 100-year war or something that started in the 40s, or am I mixing two subjects?
You're getting slightly mixed up, but you're absolutely correct. My understanding is that if I can find the element here, let's have a look. I mean, can't find the information.
That's okay.
Just offhand, but
that's no problem. But obviously, there's a war going on between different factions of extraterrestrials.
Yes.
And then there was a 100-year, maybe it wasn't a war, maybe a 100-year plan to desensitize us and acclimate us. And
well, I'm glad. Yes, we need to address that. I'm just finding the exact place here. I think it's at the beginning of the final chapter, if I recall correctly. Mm.
But nonetheless, that would make perfect sense of trying.
This is, yes, I've got it here. I do have it here, John. It was acquired quite a number of years ago. But this is what I was told by a United States government informant. I would never give his name at all. But my information is that there is, in fact, an alien presence on this Earth, and there is a hybridization program. And what I have been told by several people is that these creatures have a long-term plan to create a race of alien-human hybrids, purportedly to make us more peaceful. But in fact, their true purpose is to create a passive human race incapable of violence by eradicating the human emotions that enable us to survive, thus laying us open to conquest. I'm just quoting from my book here because I think it's quite important. But as I've said, if this has been a long-term stratagem, I've yet to see much evidence of the human race becoming less violent. In any event, what I've been told is these particular aliens are not omnipotent, and to a certain extent they feared us. And I was also told that a number of their bases were guarded by elements of the United States military. And it was all compartmentalized under Project Aquarius. For example, there was a select cell within the Army which worked with other security cells in Air Force and Navy. And around 100 personnel from the Air Force Office of Special Investigations, that's AFOSI, which actually deal specifically with the alien situation, were involved. And in 1998, I was invited to the Defense Airborne Reconnaissance Office in the Pentagon by General Kenneth Israel. And I was there for half an hour. There were several other people there. And he confirmed for me that AFOSI, the Air Force Office of Special Investigations, was definitely sort of the main investigative group, since what he said to me was that the phenomenon seemed to be more of a policing problem rather than one affecting national security. But I was given a lot of information, and some of it's quite alarming. As you're probably aware, all sorts of problems have arisen, but in any event, we have a lot of information, thank heavens, that's been acquired by various researchers over the years.
Exactly, especially such as yourself, who has such high contacts with people. And again, everything I've read over the last 2.5 decades of yours has been proven by other sources. Either, I don't know if they were following your work and then just did their own investigation, but pretty much everything you've said that I've read has been confirmed, and things that haven't yet are going to be, in my mind, because you've never been wrong on anything, and that's why I always love talking to you.
I wouldn't go that far.
To me, I haven't seen anything from everything I've read. I think last time I told you this, even your book, Above Top Secret, was the sole reason Captain Robert Salas went ahead to talk about the Malmstrom Air Force Base incident. Although he got confused. The one you wrote about happened a week before, and he just assumed that was his, but he didn't realize that there were multiple of these nuclear shutdowns. Now, let me go back to what you mentioned. Yes, AFOSI, Air Force Office of Special Investigations.
Yes, yeah.
They're, like you said, the top of the ladder. I've also heard that the Navy has their Office of Special Investigations.
I'm sure.
And they too, I don't know if they share information or not, but of course, AFOSI is on top. Now, Bud Hopkins, before he passed away, and the people who have continued his work and who have been working alongside him for years, Yvonne Smith, Barbara Lamb, Dr. Jacobs, Kathleen Martin, they've told me basically was that initially when people, women and men were being abducted and sperm and ova taken, these hybrids were basically being made inside the woman and then taken out prematurely, grown on the ship. They were told to, they were shown these babies that looked more alien than human, and were told to love them and do certain things. That progressed over time to where they started looking more and more human, to the point where they looked so human that recently, the last 15 years or so, maybe give or take plus or minus five years, instead of being, say, shown them and love me, love them and we're observing, they're actually being shown human scenarios, such as a grocery store, as a what do you do in there? What do you buy? Or a door with a doorknob. What do you do with it? Or a stove in a kitchen. What's it for? And what I took away from this was that they are preparing to walk amongst us without us knowing, and basically to infiltrate us. And that's kind of what you said. So if that's the case, then we're obviously nearing the end game, because they're looking more and more human. And now, instead of being told the basics of the human woman to love these extraterrestrials or love these hybrids while they're being observed, they're actually being told to show them how to be human. Now, that to me raises big concerns. Do you think that's something we should fear, or do you think the other factions that actually want these bad ETs off of away from us are going to intervene. I mean, again, this is just pure speculation, but...
It is just speculation. I honestly don't know. What I've learnt is that the alien species, this is described by my source about the so-called Greys, told me that they lived for several hundreds of years, and anatomically they were different. They had a bi-chambered heart, and a single lung served to oxygenate their blood and tissues and to eliminate bodily wastes in gaseous form. Vegetable-based food was liquefied and nutrients absorbed through their tissues, not gastronomically. And apparently relating to the alien hybridization progress, the wombs of their females are much smaller than those of humans, thus unable to accommodate transgenic fetuses for more than 2 months. Hence, human wombs were favored. And I think this explains why, you know, after several months that these small critters grab what's available to them. Extracted prematurely after a 2 month period, apparently.
Exactly.
So, I mean,
first trimester.
Yes, I believe so.
Yeah, that's very prematurely. That it would never live. They would never live if they were on Earth and they were removed from the body. A fetus that young, it's impossible. Yeah. Now, again, I'm going to change gears to something that I think is huge. A lot of people have dismissed this as a joke, but when you actually watch the video, nobody's joking. President Medvedev, under Prime Minister Putin, was doing an interview for a state-run television in Russia, and the journalist after went ahead and asked him some questions about extraterrestrials, but he thought the microphone was off.
Absolutely correct. And Medvedev, Russian Prime Minister Medvedev, this was the following a television interview in, I think, December the 7th, 2012. This journalist interviewed Medvedev, supposedly off the air. And at one point, the Prime Minister, Medvedev, was asked if the president had been handed secret files on aliens when receiving the briefcase needed to activate Russia's nuclear arsenal. Along with the briefcase with nuclear codes, responded Medvedev, apparently quite seriously, the president is given a special top secret folder which in its entirety contains information about aliens who have visited our planet and a report of the absolutely secret special service that exercises control over aliens on the territory of our country. And finally, Medvedev says, I will not tell you how many of them are among us because it may cause panic. And that leaked out, of course, because there was a journalist who was recording his every word at that time, and I don't think he was aware that it was being recorded.
And it wasn't just audio. The video of this actually exists.
Yes. I've seen it, yeah.
And I can't believe how the first of all, I didn't see this reported on CNN or Fox News. I had to find this in alternative media. But even in Yahoo News, Google News, or whatever you found, those mainstream websites, they put a spin on it. Medvedev joking about aliens, or Medvedev jokes, plays a prank on the journalist. Yeah. But yet, you could see he's pure seriousness on his face. There's nothing in his words to indicate laughing. So to me, that's just a pure disclosure event. I don't understand how people take that and try to...
I think it was taken quite seriously by Moscow News at the time. I mean, there were a few sarcastic comments, but, the information was there. And as you say, it was videoed, and he looks very serious when he's talking about all that.
Yes, exactly. And now... that's Russia. Going to the U.S., we haven't had anything as dramatic lately. I wish we did. I really wish we did, because then people could have really pinned stuff on him. But just out of curiosity, Will Smith's son wanted to ask Barack Obama about aliens. Yes. And the answer that Obama gave, some people would say, was joking, but at the same time, it kind of just confirmed what he was asking. You know about that story, right?
Yes, I do, yeah.
You mind telling the listeners a little bit about it?
Well, no, I have to look up an index for that. Well,
basically, I remember he asked, his father, Will, kept telling him, don't ask. And he kept asking his dad, Daddy, can I please ask? Can I please ask this question?
Yeah.
And finally, Obama says to him, you want to ask about the aliens, don't you? And he basically, Jaden Smith says, yes. And he said something along the lines of that, if I was briefed about him or told about him, it would have been right in this room.
That's correct. Yes, I remember that.
And on top of that, Bill Clinton made those famous statements. I think, I don't know if it was in Berlin or where it was, where he basically said about Roswell, the Air Force is not saying anything, and I want to know too. And then not too long ago, he went on the Jimmy Kimmel show and again addressed this topic. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering if he knew something or he's just really cut out of the loop and wants to know something.
I think both. Actually, he's partly cut out of the loop, but he's obviously done some homework on the subject. In my opinion.
Yeah, and I would agree with you, because in your book you write about Lawrence Rockefeller, and he was extremely interested, funded a study, and there's a very famous photo of Hillary Clinton walking with him and holding a book on aliens or UFOs. And this, to me, showed that the First Lady, the President made with the remarks, the First Lady's picture, and Rockefeller being one of the most wealthiest and most influential men in the United States, if not across the globe, obviously the three of them together talking about such a subject, it was no joke.
Yes.
So,
I mean, I have Rockefeller's famous letter, Lawrence S. Rockefeller's letter from February of 1996. I think he's written to John Gibbons, PhD assistant to the President for Science and Technology, and he says the public interest in UFOs and extraterrestrial intelligence obviously remains very high, as evidenced by the recent cover story in Time magazine and the many television programs, including one this week on public television's distinguished NOVA series. I sponsored this report because it seemed useful to bring together the most credible evidence about UFO sightings in the form of eyewitness reports, official statements, and scientific views. While I do not necessarily agree with every finding and conclusion, I do believe that the evidence presented indicates that this subject merits serious scientific study. Toward that end, I hope that our government, other governments, and the United Nations will cooperate in making any information they may have available.
And
that's signed by Lawrence Rockefeller.
Yet, sadly,
so I would like to meet him one day.
So would I.
Can you arrange that for me?
I'll do my best. We'll have a dinner, the three of us. But obviously, for him to say that, we both know where his mind was. But sadly, ever since that statement, the governments have not shared, at least with us, maybe they've shared amongst each other their files. But I do know some governments are moving closer to, if you want to call it disclosure, or at least opening their files.
Some of them are, definitely, yes.
Can you name a few off the top of your head that you would know?
Well, I think Russia has come out with quite a few things. As far as I recollect, they've had encounters in space, with craft from elsewhere, according to my information. Certainly, United States regularly has contacts with these things. And I don't know about Great Britain, but there certainly have been encounters with aircraft and so forth. In aircraft with these things, because we don't have such an elaborate space program, obviously, as the United States. So. But it is worldwide. There's no question about it, and it's well known. Most governments are well aware of what's going on, but it's just considered far too embarrassing to come out with all the facts. Particularly if people have been abducted, and there are some of the beings on this planet do not have our best interests at heart, and that's disturbing information. But the good information is that there are the goodies. There are good guys from other planets who do have our best interests at heart, and I believe have actually been on this planet for longer than we have, and we are genetically related to them.
I would agree with that too. And some other countries I know, at least I don't know the names of them, but in the continent, of course, here in the Americas, South America, there's some countries that are very open to this. Brazil being one of them.
You're quite right. Brazil, in particular. I mean, there was an occasion when numerous Brazilian Air Force intelligence officers went into the Amazonian jungle and had their own encounters, you know, with all the witnesses there. I mean, they were all there. And all this information has been published openly. I published it in my book, and they're much, much more open in Brazil, in South America, in certain other parts of the planet. There are some countries and some areas wherever I've been to. For example, I spent a lot of time in Puerto Rico. I think I made 7 visits there, and I only on one occasion possibly saw a UFO on the 7th, my last visit there. But the problem there is that it's a very Catholic country, and the people do not like discussing the subject. They absolutely freeze if you talk about the alien situation, because they know perfectly well it's very real, and there are abductions going on in the forested areas, all sorts of things, and they absolutely clam up, with a few exceptions. I mean, I interviewed a police officer who was woken up in the middle of the night by a strange noise. He went down into the garage, and there was this chupacabras, this bizarre-looking creature, which has pervaded Puerto Rico for many years. And it was attacking his dog. So he tried to shoot at it, and he did actually fire a shot at it, and the force of the shot forced this creature back onto the policeman's car, and then it ran off at high speed, leaving huge pools of blood, which was taken away by the police and the military for investigations. And I think the actual blood was examined very, very in great detail in Mexico. That's my understanding. So we get events like that, which can be very disturbing, even to a police officer like that particular guy who I had the pleasure of interviewing, together with Graham Shepherd, who was another student of our subject, like myself.
If this happened in the United States, we clearly would not know about it. Those police officers would be quarantined, threatened. This would have been covered up so quickly. I was always hoping that a country would go rogue, such as Puerto Rico, even though they're the extreme ties with the U.S., maybe even Brazil, who really doesn't need us, in essence, doesn't need the U.S. for anything as far as oil, because they don't use it, or other reasons. Point being, I was hoping that another country would basically disclose and maybe show some of their artifacts from a crash and retrieval, and maybe even bodies, forcing the rest of the world to disclose. That's a scenario that I'm always playing in my mind and hoping will happen.
I think it'll happen eventually, but when?
When is the key?
I haven't a clue.
Exactly. When is the key? We have a little under 7-8 minutes, so I'm going to get a couple more questions, and I wanted to ask you, might as well ask you this now, since you saw something in Puerto Rico, you saw a craft, but you...
Well, I'm not sure. I mean, I've been, as I said, I was visiting there 7 times with my then girlfriend, and I never actually saw anything that I couldn't explain, except on the last occasion that I was there, and we both saw this thing. It was just a point of light in the sky, but it was zigzagging in a strange way, and then suddenly it just shot into the sea. And it's well known, this was in the, the southeast part of Puerto Rico, and I mean, we both saw it, and we both saw it shoot into the sea at phenomenal speed after this zigzagging movements above the hotel we were staying in at the time. But you know, that was the only time I saw anything peculiar in Puerto Rico, despite 7 visits.
And now, that obviously is defying laws of physics. And what aircraft would fly into the water unless it had those capabilities? And according to the mainstream knowledge, we don't. But this is why UFOs are also considered USOs because they have the capability to fly or to
unidentified submarine object. Absolutely.
Yes. So to me, they're the same thing. They're just the moment they go underwater, they turn from a UFO to USO, but they're the same craft going to and from bases. But nonetheless, exactly, it's all the same thing. Defying laws of physics as we know them doesn't necessarily mean that because our understanding of physics doesn't understand theirs, doesn't mean that they can't that what ours are wrong.
Exactly.
So anyhow, yeah. The points that the scientists keep making to me always boggle my mind. It's like, well, wait a minute, 500 years ago, you guys thought the world was flat,
yeah.
You know? And 20 years ago, 40 years ago, we were told there was no such thing as planets outside of our solar system. So obviously times are changing. Now, again, before we run out of time, I wanted to get to your context. You've actually had two encounters, if I'm not mistaken, with human-looking extraterrestrials.
Three.
Briefly.
The first was in 1963. I'll go through these very quickly because we're you know, short of time.
Yes.
1963, I was touring with the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra, and we were in California, I think on the California-Arizona border, and I saw this extraordinary, very pretty-looking girl, quite small, waiting in line, as they say in the States, as you say in the States, and I just thought in my mind, I think you're from somewhere else, and in my mind I said, if you are actually from elsewhere, could you come by our table, because I had three colleagues with me, musicians, with, you know, there were four of us together at the table, and this girl came out of the line, and she came past, she was relatively small, she came by and she did the most graceful bow to us all, the sweet smile, and then had a deadpan look, and she just walked away, and I never saw her again. And I remember the guys sitting with me saying, "Hey, where did you find her, Tim?" And I hadn't. And then the next one was in 1967, and I just, in my mind, I was in New York. We were working at Carnegie Hall, doing a lot of concerts with the London Symphony Orchestra, and I just sent out a thought. One afternoon, I sat in the lobby of what was then the Park Sheraton Hotel in New York, and I said, if any of you guys from elsewhere around, please come and sit down beside me and prove it. And after about 35 minutes, this guy comes in, pale olive complexion, blue-green eyes, immaculately dressed, and he came and sat down beside me on a sofa, and in my mind I said, okay, if you're the guy I'm looking for, would you take your right index finger and hold it to the right side of your nose? And immediately he did that and kept it there. Now people say, well, why didn't you talk to him? Well, I hadn't requested that. And so there was absolutely no conversation, but I had the proof I needed. And my third experience, which was in 2006 in Wrocław in Poland, I was the guest of honor at what was called Professor Dudek's Salon. It's a bizarre story. I'll be as quick as I possibly can. And as the guest of honor, I had given a presentation and everything. There were about 80 people there. And I had been noticing someone I was convinced was from elsewhere. They have a very similar complexion to the guy I'd seen in New York and so forth, and I sent out a few telepathic messages. There was absolutely no response whatsoever, but he happened to be the last to give a presentation to the assembled gathering. As I say, there was about 80 people there, and he gave a presentation. I don't know how many minutes it lasted. It could have probably been about 10 minutes, and it was called Earth's Future in Space. So I was all agog, and it was absolutely fascinating. So he came by me after this. He was the last person to give a presentation, and I said, I think you have a great deal of information. And I went to shake his hand. There was no shaking. I mean, he just looked at me completely unblinking, blue-green eyes, very cool customer. And 5 minutes later, after he'd gone, none of us there could remember what he'd actually said. So I thought, well, that's not a problem. You know, Professor Dudek, who was running this salon, and this prestigious debating society, said, oh, no. I said, I'll be able to get in touch with him. I couldn't get in touch with anybody because even though there was a professional photographer was there, I couldn't get photographs. Even though it was recorded, I couldn't get any recordings. None of us could. And very, very bizarre. So and 5 minutes after my confrontation with him, which was on a very polite level, I could remember nothing myself. So that's just how frustrating this whole subject can be. But I think one day, perhaps, at least all of those present will be able to
remember,
revive that thing from our brains.
That's actually what I was going to say to you is all these several contactees and abductees I've interviewed, as well as the hypnotherapists, like I said, Yvonne Smith, Barbara Lamb, Kathleen Martin, Dr. Jacobs, to name a few, all say that a lot of them, when they go on board, they tell the extraterrestrials, I want to remember this. And they're told, you're not going to. You're going to forget, but you will remember at some point in time.
That's
so
correct.
So I think at some point, whatever the cataclysm is, you will remember. Now, we got a minute and a half left, so I'm going to ask one question and then ask you to give whatever statement or any closing statement you want to all the listeners. You, in your book, it's just so phenomenal. We definitely have to do this again. There are a series of photographs that were taken, 7 pictures by an Italian engineer whose last name is Manguzzi, where it shows this an otherworldly astronaut exiting his ship and kind of walking around it, and you enlarge these photographs. Can you tell us briefly about that before you...
Yeah, this was in July in 1952 on the Scherchen Glacier, which is the Italian side of the area in particular in Switzerland. And the 7 photographs were taken of a craft which actually landed, and there are photographs of the occupant and photographs of the actual craft, which can be seen very, very distinctly. And they were taken by Gian Piero Manguzzi, who's an Italian engineer, in the presence of his wife during a climbing trip on the Scherchen Glacier. And that couple, Manguzzi and his wife, were partially paralyzed during the encounter, but Manguzzi managed to take some clear pictures as Manguzzi and his wife, lay close to the ground. And there are photographs, 2 photographs showing the astronaut walking around the craft as if inspecting it. So, I mean, I think that's absolutely genuine. And there is a letter which I've reproduced in my book. I can't find it hand to saying that it was taken very, very seriously by the Swiss authorities. They did not ridicule the event at all. They said there was a lot of evidence and so forth.
Go ahead, Johnny.
Hi, Tim. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Hi, good evening, and it's an honor again to meet you. I followed you for many years myself. I think one of the early videos I saw of you looking very fresh and young was around...
It's been a long time ago.
No, you still look fresh and young. It's the musician in you that keeps you young.
Well, talking of that, before I ask my question, have you ever been in any pop videos playing your violin? Because I'm pretty sure I've seen you in some of the 80s videos.
Yes.
You were?
Yes, there are a few, yeah. Doing sessions in the 1970s and 1980s and early 1990s, and I appeared on quite a few video things, so...
It was either a Rick Astley one or something like that. It was quite popular, but they showed, obviously, the orchestra in the background, and there was what I believed was you, you know?
Yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah. But I do tell people that, and they say, no, it can't be him. And I'm saying, I think he does say...
There are a few, yeah.
Go ahead, Johnny. I know he's...
My last question, Tim, was what's the most popular question that you get from, the investigators themselves? What do they ask you? What do they feel you can give to the puzzle? Is there a certain area that people ask you?
I think, have you had encounters with actual aliens? Have you had encounters with craft?
I've seen craft myself, yeah. I've seen orbs, I've seen what they call Ibanis, all of these orbs.
Ibanis?
Ibani, yeah. And it's basically like hundreds of orbs joining together in sets of four and then, you know, stacking up. So you get this sort of what they call in English a space serpent. But it looks like lots and lots of orbs all joining together. And that's what I saw, a place called Badger's Mount, just off in Kent, just near where I live.
It's near Sevenoaks, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. Well, I found out that where I'd seen these, I'd gone back with a friend a couple of days later and found out that there was a DTLS training base or some base on this Badger's Mount that deals with all of the remote controlling of drones. All of the electronics.
I think I heard that from another source,
communications. So it was quite ironic that these drones were these orbs in this case were hovering right over this base. And as I say, I was driving on a side road for some obscure reason. We ended up coming off the M25 and coming along this side road that brought me up to Badger's Mount, and it took me straight past this base on a hill, and that's where we noticed all these orbs initially. I said to my mate, look at them orbs on the left. He said, they're not orbs, that's a constellation. I said, it's not. Look, you can see the stars behind. Yeah. And anyway, he was having nothing to do with it, and I realised, you know, there's some people that you just can't tell. And I just ignored it all, and for some reason I just forgot all about it. But I carried on driving, and lo and behold, not a minute later, is like this pillar of orbs, you know, and it's going up about 400 feet in the air. And I just drove up very, very slowly next to it, and I couldn't stop. My person was saying, don't stop, you've got your children in the car, anything can hit us, any excuse not to stop. But I slowed down enough to see it, that the base of it was about 30 foot from the ground, and all these orbs that were hovering in the field that would come along from a constellation were sort of coming in over the field, and then individually with their own intelligence were all going to the bottom of this pillar, and it would rise up after four joined, and just enough for the next lot to come in. And as I say, I looked up and it was about 400 feet up. And I was just bewildered by it. I didn't feel threatened or fear.
I wish I'd had an experience like that, Johnny.
Mr. Good, it is truly a fantastic case, as is your entire book, Earth, Alien Enterprise. It's always an honor to speak with you. And sorry, our time is up, everybody. And we will bring back Mr. Good again in the future. He is, like I said, one of my favorite ufologists. And as we end this show, again, this is Dr. J signing out. Follow me at Researcher on a Mission or at Dr. J on the Live.